Colonel Hutchison, Reel 13. What were your first opinion? I mean, you got some of the comments before. You didn't go into action in them during the fighting that broke out that soon after. But what were your first impressions of the comet? Because you'd been fighting in the Sherman.
Well, I think the first impression that we had was here was a far better British tank than we'd ever seen before. I think people were favourably impressed, but I do remember that somewhere down on the coast, somebody had rigged up, or got a Panther down there on the range, and they were horrified to find that the 77mm gun wouldn't penetrate the glassy plate of the Panther bounced off, same as our 75mm shells had. There was much higher velocity, but having said that, it was a better gun than the 75mm. There's no doubt.
In the Sherman, would you always use the high explosive shell rather than the anti-tank shell against a Panther? Or, I mean, what would you do?
It depended on the target. If you were firing another tank, I think I would start off with... I didn't do as much shooting as a troops, generally speaking. If you had a tank, I can remember positively knocking out myself. I was having a duel. If he was shooting at me and I was shooting at him, I won, unfortunately.
When was that? We haven't actually...
Bursi Sonneval there.
What exactly happened? You might as well use it as an illustration.
Well, I got him about third shot, the solid shot. And then I changed to HE after that, that's what I grew up. But mostly, I think, one used HE because it was the more appropriate ammunition anyway to use if you were firing at, guns or infantry. But I think the Mark IV wasn't as well protected, and I think you could penetrate the Mark IV.
It was a Mark IV you were dueling with,
yes,
was it?
Yes, I think so.
Was there any point in firing anti-tank shell at Panthers and Tigers?
Well, it was rather... unrewarding to find your shot bouncing off the thing, which I actually did, and Tigers too. Tigers weren't as well designed, but they had even thicker armour. But the Panther was more of a cruiser tank. I think it was a faster tank than the Tiger. Tiger was a lumbering brute, but it was very, very heavily armed, and with this super 88mm gun, a really good gun there.
Which did you think was the better tank? I mean, which did you fear most? Which is perhaps the
Tiger.
How did you deal with Panthers and Tigers? I mean, how would you deal with a Panther? I mean, could a Sherman take on a Panther in a duel like you had with the Mark IV?
Yes. Yes. If you've got it sideways on the Panther, you can deal with it all right. But so often, of course, the Germans are well aware too that they were least vulnerable when they were head on to whoever they were shooting at. And so they would do that as far as possible, I imagine. So I certainly would have done if I'd been a.
So would your tactics be to try and get round an identified Panther or Tiger?
Yes, I suppose so. And I don't think the opportunity to do that. I think it was just luck if you've got one sort of going sideways. I don't think they would get around or one's heading would go a hell of a long way around.
Would an HE shell have any impact on either of those tanks?
Yes. Well, I suppose you could land an HE shell on top of the turret. But an HE shell on the glassy plate would have had an even less effect. Than straight and eight on the inside shot. No, it was just a disadvantage, which one had to live with. One thing about the Sherman was that I think it was more mechanically reliable than the Panther. I think the Panther tended to be a more sophisticated vehicle in a way to be a little unreliable. You did come across broken down Panthers.
And the Sherman was reliable.
B Squadron, I think it was, captured a Panther intact somewhere and put it in a troop. But it didn't last for very long. It broke down and then it had to be dumped.
What else was there about the Comet? I mean, it was the same crew. Same crew roles, I think. What was it like to work in the turret?
You know, I don't remember. I think it was as acceptable as a Sherman. From that point of view, comfort, to get in and out of. But I've no very clear memories of detail.
Was it well armoured, or better armoured than the Sherman?
Cause a bit, but the design was not as. As good it, as the Panther with his sloping glassy plate that the Panther had, and fairly subsequent, the Comet was the first prototype of a post-war British tank, and subsequent models tended to have better design, I think, over that front glassy plate.
Now, what about your billets? And you moved into Ypres, and
we had a very nice house for our squadron nurse, where we slept and fed. A lady called Madame de France, who was very house proud. I think she found us people like Steele Brownlee. And Jimmy Sampson, rather noisy. And the men had a good time, and they tended to pick up girlfriends quite readily. In fact, we had organised a squadron dance. The following morning, when a good many hangovers, we got the warning order that the Germans had broken through in the Ardennes, and we were to stand by to go back to pick up our old tanks and Brussels and get down to the Ardennes, whatever that was, middle of December.
Looks like 20th of December, yes. When you heard the situation.
Yes.
Had you been to the dance? Were you hungover?
I think the answer is certainly yes. Certainly I have a hangover.
Well, did the mess drink a lot, would you say?
I mean
the officers' mess.
So the officers' mess. As much as they could get. I used to go up quite a bit to the RHQ mess, because several of them there, Colonel Alec, for instance, and the Doctor, Brown Luca, and the technical officer. What was his name? He was a 24th Lancer, very nice fellow, they're very keen on, all very keen on poker. We used to have a sort of poker school. Apparently Alec was quite keen on poker. That was quite fun after dinner. But we weren't, that was more when we came back to eat.
And they drank as in a fairly heavily as well.
We weren't there very long.
Now, how are you getting on with Scott, Alex Scott as a colonel? I mean, were you one of his squadron commanders? What was your relationship like?
Oh, I think good. He was a shy man, and kind of a bit silent, but he had a dry sense of humour, but he was very nice. I liked him, very straightforward.
How did he run his O groups? I mean, what would a typical O group under Scott be like?
As short as possible. Let's see, for a bumper.
Would he present them on his own, or would he have his intelligence officer to help him?
He would take it himself, as a rule, as I seem to remember. And of course, often, or more often than not, it was a brief affair in a leader, and maybe he had to take people in turn, he would give instructions to one squadron, if the other one squadron leader wasn't immediately available, and put it down in the Vega, preferably inside the turret of the tank, where you've got a light.
And were you well equipped with maps and the other things you need? I mean, just
yes. I think we always had maps. Not bad. Some places better than others, but no, they're perfectly adequate.
Now,
I've still got my old map box tank. I can show you the maps we had.
Now, what about the operations from the 20th of December on with the Ardennes?
Yes, well, we built it up mostly in lorries. Oh, I suppose we took the Fireflies with us. They motored two separately up to Brussels. We spent a night in Brussels, somewhere in the outskirts of the city, and then near where the tank park was. And then we just took over tanks as quickly as possible, and then we got off as quickly as possible down to Namur. Which was our immediate destination to stop the Germans coming across the Meuse there. The third tanks were in a place called Dinan, about halfway between Namur and the French frontier, and the 23rd Hussars, I remember, were down on the French frontier. I don't know whether it was in France or in Belgium, a place called Giverny, I think, not very far from Sedan. And anyway, there we were, and we arrived there before Christmas. And of course, the whole of the battle area, up till about Christmas time, was in a dense fog, and the Germans had taken full advantage of that, because of course, the one thing we had command of was the air at that stage, but we couldn't use it until, I think, the day before Christmas.
You were apparently going forward onto the Andoy Ridge. Yeah, does that sound familiar?
Our goal was to go forward a few miles onto the onto a ridge with a very good view of the approach road on the main road. We had no infantry with us, just tanks. Every morning we were out there by first light, and then we came back into the city after dark or at dark. And C Squadron were on the bridge, I think, to stop anybody coming up and move more immediately on the bridge. And apart from endless rumours about where the Germans had got to, we never saw any there. But the third tanks at Dinan did knock out some German tanks quite close to the bridge, where they were in the sort of role that I suppose we, A Squadron, were in at Namur, because they knocked out a couple of German tanks. In fact, I think that might be described as the high water of that German counter-offensive, because they never crossed the Meuse. And then soon after Christmas, the weather had cleared by then, and instead of having fog and low cloud, we had sunshine and frost. And we then motored south and into the Ardennes with the object of starting to push the Germans back where they started from.
So this is when you went down to La Fontaine?
Yes. We went down past Dinan, where the third tanks were had been, and then turned left and into the more hilly country of the southern Ardennes, where in due course we got involved in a battle there. The old place called Bureau, was it?
I think so. Now, what happened there in this battle?
We got held up going into Bure, so I was sent round with A Squadron on the left and up to a place called Chapel Hill, which was roughly held by the Germans. In fact, they had a tank up there, a Mark IV tank, which knocked out one of our tanks. But I don't think we had much damage apart from that. But the idea was that we would try and get into Bure from Chapel Hill, which we never actually succeeded in doing. But about that sort of time, it started to snow. Since I've been involved in battle in snow, I hit it all.
Did that not make driving very difficult with the frost and the snow, and didn't they leave the ice on the roads?
The tanks weren't too good on icy roads. They were slithering about a bit if they were going uphill. They were all right in snow, I think, seemed to be. Or that snow. They didn't interfere with them. And then the second day...
This would be the third. You'd moved up on there on the 2nd of January, I think.
Yes.
And on the 3rd...
On the 3rd... we got the girl got an offer of leave because two officers or something like that. Anyway, I was selected as one of, and so I left. I thought slightly ignominiously that I had to go. no question to say go tomorrow or the day after. And so I think how I got down from Chapel Hill in the snow, I don't remember. And but anyway, I went on leave, for a week's leave.
Back to England?
Yes, yes. I don't remember how I got there at all. I remember my leave was hard weather here. My parents lived in Fife then, in quite a large house. And they, of course, they hadn't had the central heating on there, but they'll all switch off, I think.
Right, carry on.
Anyway, they thought this poor boy coming back from the front, and just put the central heating on for him. So, you know, the last bit of coal stowed into the pot and off it went. And as soon as I left, the central heating was switched off, and then the frost back here got even more intense. And my mother said one morning she heard first crack, and then another crack of this radiator bursting. And so, finished up, I think, with over 20 burst radiator. They all had been taken out and mended and put back again, all on my account. But by the time that I got back, that particular battle had been successfully concluded or petered out, and soon after that, the squadron and the regiment came back to Ypres to continue re-equipping. And anyway, by the time I got back, they were all back at Ypres again.
So you rejoined them at Ypres?
Ypres, yes.
Now, how did the training go with the Comet? Because I believe they had a range at Gravelines where they actually could fire into the Germans somewhere off Calais or somewhere, I can't quite remember.
Yes, we weren't, I don't think we did much, if any, squadron training there and that sort of troop training. I think it was more becoming familiar with the vehicle from driving point of view and the mechanical point of view and the gun point of view and firing the guns and doing that sort of thing. I seem to remember.
There was a lot of crew training.
Quite a time.
They had a belated Christmas celebration. Do you remember that?
Oh, yes,
because you were in action, obviously. I think on February the 8th, 20th of January they had Christmas.
Yes, yes.
Do you remember what a Christmas was like with the five then?
The officers all traditionally used to serve the men's mess before having their own Christmas lunch. I don't remember another awful thing we used to do, not there, happily, was also a rugger match, the officers against the sergeants. And that was what every night the night before. It was a pretty ghastly experience.
You but mentioned it.
I didn't remember having that at Ypres, nor do I remember how we spent that Christmas at Ypres. Except that I remember we did have a belated Christmas, because on Christmas Eve, I got the handsome present from His Majesty's government of an orange and a bottle of beer, or a can of beer.
Now, one thing on March 10th, it's just jumping ahead a bit, but Montgomery visited and you got presented with the MC by him, with Brownlee, Sampson, and Trooper Essien.
Yes. Yeah.
What do you remember of that meeting? And did you get the chance to speak to Mulgrew, or did he speak to you more likely?
Monty was just typical Monty. Come and sit down, have your photographs taken with Monty. That's all with Mark. So we all sat down and had our photographs taken. I suppose I've got it somewhere, I think. I don't know where it is. But he wasn't there for very long, I don't think.
What did you think of Montgomery?
I was always on a pro-Monty, and I thought I ought to be. But either just before or just after the war, I went to some cinema somewhere where he addressed a collection of all ranks, and I thought he made himself terribly cheap. I was almost embarrassed.
In what way?
Well, I thought he made himself rather cheap in a way.
Populist.
Popular. Yeah. He wanted to be popular with other ranks, particularly. I don't think that went down all too well with them. Certainly didn't go down well with me. I was unimpressed with him on that occasion. But I have grave doubts about Goodwood. I have doubts too about Market Garden. But I think he was unlucky in that there was a lot of German armour had just come into that area after the thing had been planned. But I don't know whether that was bad luck or bad judgment. But I think that. I think Goodwood was an ill-conceived operation. He always claimed that it was a strategic success, but I think that was because it was a tactical failure in that they drew all the armor, the weight of the armor, over onto the east side and enabled the American First Army and then subsequently the Third Army to succeed in breaking out when they did. I don't know.
Now, what about the MC? I mean, were you pleased? How important was that to you?
It was what they call the immediate one. It was related to the Goodwood operation, I think. Cited in that way. I heard about it.
I heard about it
when we were just before we crossed the Orme, I think, back there in middle of August, that sort of time.
Were you pleased? Was it an important,
Yes. It was quite unexpected when I got it. Please, I was delighted. Steele Brown is certainly, he got a well-deserved one. And Oswald Welsh, I'm very glad that Padre, he got one. Jimmy Sampson got one, I think. Yeah.